Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 125.
This week on the podcast, a couple of ISIS bombings and Republicans are already excited about the prospect of boots on the ground in unnecessary war.
And thanks to Senate Discord, Eric Holder's resignation might end up just being for show.
After Obama's fake latte salute gaffe, how long will we have to wait for a pumpkin spice latte salute campaign from Starbucks?
And the struggle is real for would-be murderers who just happen to be Muslim. It's hard to be notorious when Al-Qaeda gets all the credit for your crimes.
Values voters can't decide whether gay marriage is just boring or a scourge on society, but they all seem to know who Ben Carson is.
And the self-appointed real-life Disney princess is suing Disney for stealing her tale of having a sister and living in a village with doors.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yeah.
And that's where you should go. That's the end of us trying to sell you on finding us on the internet.
That's it.
We're just going to tell you the news now.
Yeah.
That's our plan.
And the news this week is
bad.
We're back to war.
Yeah.
Again.
Quick reprieve from war.
Not war.
We're back to promises of prolonged involvement in foreign skirmishes using our military.
Right.
That may or may not result in troops on the ground.
Right. Exactly. Yes. We started bombing ISIS this week.
That's what we did.
So, that's happening.
That's happening.
Yes.
We're doing it. We did like 10 missions, I think.
Yeah,
this
well,
week.
Just like since Friday, I think.
Because
they've been going all week, but it's really sort of they've like amped it up.
Oh, since Friday, that was the 10 missions.
Yeah, they started earlier in the week.
It's not what you want.
Yeah. No, it's going full force.
Yeah.
At least this time around, we're like actually, like, we do sort of have a coalition, like, of real countries.
It's a much less embarrassing coalition than the coalition of the willing.
Which was.
Do you recall,
no one.
Was a really. Sad collection of nations that had nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, exactly.
I believe Micronesia was in the coalition of the willing.
Yeah, uh-huh. Once that's your selling point.
Once you've had to tell people that Micronesia is in your coalition.
It's not great.
That's a bad sign.
Yeah, so this time around we've got Britain, Belgium, Denmark, France, Netherlands, Australia, and then also like, and this has been sort of like a big thing, is whether we can actually get some of these countries in the region to sort of like friggin' help us out there.
Right.
Because like, it's their problem. And also the militaries, I think I heard someone bring up this point this week and I was like, oh yeah, the militaries that these people have, like Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and the UAE, are basically like our militaries.
Yeah.
Like they are just basically like fighting with shit that we either gave them or sold to them. So it's like, use it to fucking help us.
Yeah.
Like, and help yourselves. It's not just to help us.
Right, because the only reason that we're even involved is essentially to protect them, to ultimately protect our own economic interests in the region
whatever. I mean, ISIS is not threatening us, which I think is what so many people, I think...
A lot of people.
...have been forgetting.
Yeah.
All the important people have been forgetting,
I think. A lot of important people forgetting that. Very important point. Chuck Hagel, though, earlier this week, said something that was a little concerning that implied that we might just... be into it forever.
Yeah.
Nobody knows. He said, air power alone will not be enough to dismantle the organization. It will require a long-term commitment from the United States and all of our partners and allies. Boy.
Yep.
That's not what you want to hear.
That's not what you want to hear.
That is code, for those of you who are not familiar with code, for we don't have a plan. We're just going in and going to feel it out from there.
Also,
we might be there forever.
Not only is it code for we don't have a plan, but it's...
We don't need one.
It's not even code for we're going to have to send in some military
troops
on the ground.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. I mean, but also an interesting thing happened because like during the ISIS strikes, we also took out this group that has like a very odd name. It sounds it sounds like a business group basically or something. Like it's this Al-Qaeda group who has been holed up in Syria for a long time and they're fairly powerful apparently.
Right.
And they're called the Khorasan group, I think,
Khorasan group. It sounds like they're like an international development group that does some shady financial dealing somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
And is actually based somewhere in Europe.
Yeah, but they're a fairly, you know, important Al-Qaeda
subgroup,
and they're in Syria, and they've sort of have not necessarily been protected by Syria, but Syria sort of like has given them refuge there. So that the reason that it's interesting that we sort of decided to take them out is because we sort of that wasn't the initial intention of these airstrikes,
right?
And also because it seems as if we're now sort of, and they've said as much, but like working pretty closely with Assad here to sort of like take care of this, because they've been some of these bombings against ISIS have been in Syria, and we're sort of telling him all the things that we're doing, obviously.
Right.
But this was interesting because it seems like there would have had to have been some cooperation on his part to take them out. So whether he gave us some intelligence, like, what did we give him? There's a lot of people, there's a lot of chatter about sort of, like, what deals got made for, like, us to be able to go in there and do this, because this was not the plan that we probably initially sold to him when we said that we were going to be doing some bombings in Syria. Yeah.
I wonder, though, if this is more, this if this group is more of, like, just a sort of annoying thorn in his side than, because
it could be.
He doesn't necessarily benefit from looking like he's supporting Al-Qaeda.
No, he doesn't.
And but he maybe also doesn't want to piss off Al-Qaeda, because he's the kind of guy who's trying to play both sides against the middle. So he's probably giving refuge to this group, being like, I hope no one from Al-Qaeda causes trouble, because I've already got these idiots from ISIS on my tail. Like, and probably was happy enough to just give up whatever, just to be like, the U.S. did it. I had nothing to do with it. I wasn't involved.
Yeah. But the strikes were fairly successful. They killed its leader, and this was a group
we learned that from Twitter.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And we found out since these bombings happened that they were sort of like, they were in the process of testing some explosives that apparently were going to be able to sneak past airport security.
Yeah. Yeah, so, they were a more direct threat to the U.S. than ISIS.
Right, who was basically only trying to take over the Middle East.
Right.
I mean, they're beheading Americans, but, I mean, they're not trying to come over here and necessarily take us
over. No, they're just trying to...
Not their plan right now. Right. Maybe at some point. God only knows. They're crazy, but, I mean, it's not...
They might have a lot of plans, but...
Right.
But this is a group whose intention is to do crazy terrorist shenanigans, not take over nations.
Yes, exactly. Right.
Which is why I... That... So we're just sort of, we're getting everyone in for good measure.
Yeah, exactly.
We went to bomb ISIS, and then...
Well, Al-Qaeda's over
Al-Qaeda was there, so we were like, you know what? We're here. We have bombs.
Yeah.
We're flying right now. Let's let's just take them, too.
Yeah.
You know, we have plans. Yeah. We are already seeing the resurgence of a Republican sort of, like, pro-war, weird agenda.
Yeah. Well, we talked a little bit about it last week with Lindsey
Graham. Yeah, we talked a little bit about it with Lindsey Graham. Now Boehner is sort of, like, pushing to have boots on the ground, which is a plan that Republicans near and far love, apparently.
Yeah, exactly.
It's sort of funny, because for they were on Obama's tail to get boots off the ground when he took office, because that was the plan at the time of everyone in America, was like, let's not be at war anymore.
Yeah.
And as soon as a new war crops up, they're like right back there to like, you know what? Let's send the whole military over there. Let's just get them.
Yeah.
Let's wipe out the Middle East. Why not?
Well, and it's a good time for bipartisanship, apparently, too, because he said that he was like, if Obama wants to send a bill to Congress, like, basically for a full-scale war authorization, Boehner would call them back.
That's
because they're in recess right now. So it's like,
he would be happy
we talked
enough.
A little bit about it last week, but if there's really something that everybody can come together on, left, right, and center, apparently.
Sending more innocent Americans to die at war.
Exactly. So he said, at some point, somebody's boots are going to have to be off the ground, and they asked him, well, does it have to be Americans? And Boehner, his response was, we have no choice.
Do we not have a choice?
Apparently.
Seems like we have a choice.
In his mind. Seems like
we
would.
I feel fairly certain that there are choices that we have. Just as a person who knows some things. I'm not gonna state that as fact, but I feel like you always have the choice to not go to war.
Yeah. Well, you do.
You do. Yeah, that's definitively what you have, is the choice. Especially a war that doesn't, like, that where you're sort of buffering against sort of third-party effects. Like, we're not going to war to protect our territory from ISIS.
Right.
Like, we're going to war to protect a third party's territory from ISIS, and, like, that third party has a military that's being funded by us already.
Right.
Like, there are choices. I'm just saying there's choices, you know?
And Boehner also said, and this is, I feel like this is turning into the new sort of like, you know, Saddam Hussein weapons of mass destruction excuse to go into this war, because he said, these are barbarians. They intend to kill us. And if we don't destroy them first, we're going to pay the price. They don't intend to kill us.
That's not
the plan.
Their plan.
They have killed us, but they have only killed us and then say, we're going to keep beheading sort of individuals that we have if you don't let us do what we're planning to do over here. Like, their plans are over there.
Right. That's not the right argument to draw us into war. I mean, I think they're trying to create, like, a false equivalency between them and Al-Qaeda, which is a smart move, I guess, on their part.
Right.
But it's also a really dishonest move.
Well, it's what they did with Saddam,
It's what they did with Saddam, exactly. Yeah. And that's, like, how many more places are we going to pretend are Al-Qaeda? Like,
I know.
The whole Middle East can't be made up of Al-Qaeda members.
No.
There's other people over there. They're doing bad things, sure. That's, no one's denying that.
Yeah.
Saddam Hussein was not just like all rainbows and puppies. I get it.
But Al-Qaeda's the boogeyman.
Right.
So it's like, if you can tie anybody to them.
It's like having a, you know, the new Hitler or whatever. Like, they just sort of, like, Al Qaeda is the Hitler of the Middle East.
Yeah.
It's just like the word that you say that kind of like creates fear. Ooh. And this is funny. I mean, this is because he doesn't even say it here. It's just that the symbolism sort of like leads us to immediately jump to it. It's sort of like what's unsaid that is saying that it's Al Qaeda. It's so weird.
Yeah.
So sneaky. They're such sneak mongers.
They are.
They're the worst.
Yeah. So the other big news of the week. No segue here.
Just no segue.
Into the next story.
Here's another story that we learned about this week.
Eric Holder resigned.
Yeah.
This week.
Which apparently was a shock to me, but it apparently wasn't a shock to anyone who knew.
Well, people were pretending like it was a shock. I think the announcement came out of nowhere, but he has sort of previously said that he was going to be done by the end of this year.
Well, so the announcement came at a time when we were, like, focused on the fact that we might be at war, and then everyone was like, holy, what? Like, suddenly, and then we had to, like, shift gears. It was just, like, another thing had happened. Yeah. The disaster.
Yeah, so they announced it on Thursday. He was one of the initial cabinet
members. He's been on the job for 6 years.
Yeah, he's been there the whole time.
Probably over
And he's really sort of what everybody considers to be sort of like the biggest Obama loyalist. And really sort of like who Obama, I think, in a lot of cases has counted on to do sort of like the dirty work in terms of a lot of like race relation things and some of the like, you know, he's been what the biggest guy out there in terms of like voting rights and on some of those things like that, that I think that he's almost been sort of like Obama's proxy for sort of where he can be a little bit more, you know, I don't know, like,
well, he can be a little bit more open about
what, exactly.
He can be a little bit more liberal if he wants to be. Yeah. He can do all of those things. He can also continue to be an alumni of Stuyvesant High School.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yes.
This is a sad moment for Stuyvesant High School because
he could be in your next PSA.
He's not busy.
He's going to be retired.
Doing? He's going to hang out.
Just hanging out, yeah.
Hanging out.
Golfing, probably.
Golfing a little. Yeah, he could make a PSA on the golf course for us.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's a pretty big deal. I mean, he's, you know, he was the first African-American attorney general, and it's also, you know, at a time when we already know that the Senate is toxic right now. You can't get anything done there anyway. The confirmation hearing for whoever the new person is probably going to happen after the midterms, because the midterms are close at this point. They're only a month and a half away. And it looks like the Republicans may take the Senate. We obviously don't know yet. But, I mean, it's going to be a real
shit show
to get anybody through there, especially considering the hatred for Holder himself by the Republicans. I mean, he has really been the one declares
he suffered a lot of the, like, sort of a more kind of blunt racism, because he's had to deal with a lot of the issues that sort of, like, institutionalized racism has created, voting rights and, like, all of these people shooting black teenagers and all of the things, you know, all these things that have come up
in
the
last few years. Yeah, he's been working on racial discrimination in the justice system.
He's the guy who really has to be the front line for the Obama administration on those issues. Obama can deliver a speech with soaring rhetoric and feel inspiring, whatever. But Holder's the one who has to actually, like, deal with the issue on the ground. And so
they hate that.
And they hate that about him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He sort of, more than anyone else, I think, gets sort of, like, the blunt end of, that hatred.
Yeah.
Because they don't really have to pretend like they respect him.
Yeah.
Because he's not Obama. He's not the actual president. And they're so terrible to the president.
I was going to say, they don't care about respect to him either. So just think about how terrible they're.
No, exactly.
They can think they can get away with being to him.
Yeah, that's sort of, I don't know. I feel like he probably had to resign now just so that there was, like, a chance that they could get someone through before the new Senate takes office.
Maybe. I mean,
because they're going to get elected, but, like, then they're going to have the rest of the lame duck session, and that's usually when like this actually happens.
You know?
And they're going to have to basically, like, push through.
But if they know that they have won if they know that they've won the Senate, I mean, they could easily just putz around on this until, you know, they don't have to vote on this.
No.
And he has already said that he would stay on the job until someone's confirmed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like they
may never confirm anyone.
I know.
He may just be there for the next 2 years.
He might be stuck.
Right.
But, of course, Obama hasn't said who's going to replace him yet, but there's already sort of chatter about who that person could be. So we're gonna go through the list.
Yeah, why not?
So the one who most people are thinking about is Deval Patrick, who's, like, he's another African-American. He's the governor of Massachusetts, and he's also, you know, he was an assistant attorney general in the Civil Rights Division in the Justice Department under Clinton. And those two are close. He's also not going to be running for re-election, so he's going to be he's also available. So the timing sort of works out on that. He's going to be available starting January. But, you know, he's also sort of seen as a liberal, but, I mean, that's who you want in this office, as a Democratic president.
As a Democratic president, that's who you want in this office, and that's who I hope winds up in this office. Yeah. But this is a very similar choice to Holder himself. Right.
Yeah.
This is sort of continuing in the same vein. So if there are going to be shenanigans getting someone through the Senate, he's probably, like, ground zero of, like, who will get the brunt of that
situation. The other, another name is the current Solicitor General, Donald Verrilli, who has, you know, the Solicitor General is, like, the president's lawyer, basically. So, and he argues things in front of the Supreme Court and stuff, and, you know, he argued on behalf of the administration for the Affordable Care Act and, like, basically all of the important cases that they've had in front of the Supreme Court. So he sort of has the experience, and he's already in the administration, but he's also old and white. So that sort of is maybe not what everyone is looking for in this situation.
I mean, that's potentially the least controversial move that they could make.
Yeah, exactly.
So if they need someone, maybe that's what they'll have to do. I don't know. It certainly doesn't look good for Democrats, but it will at least sort of blunt some of the...
You know, but also I think that you have to sort of understand that, I mean, like, yes, you're right. It maybe doesn't look good, but first off, you have to get somebody through.
Right.
And second off, just because he's old and white doesn't mean he's not going to fight against, you know, things like voting rights and racial discrimination and the justice system.
It's not that I worry that he's
like that.
Someone who's, like, compromised somehow because he's not, like, young in a minority.
Right.
But it certainly doesn't, I don't feel like, I mean, nobody cares about the attorney general if they don't have to. So, you know, Holder was sort of a statement-making attorney general because he was young and he was African-American and he was, like, sort of outspoken on a lot of issues. But, like, the attorney general is sort of irrelevant if he's irrelevant.
Yeah.
So, like, at a certain point, if you need, like, a lame duck attorney general to, like, whatever. You can have an old white guy.
Yeah, sure, exactly. This is an interesting one.
Yeah, I think it'd be kind of exciting.
I know. If you are not from California, you may not have heard of our attorney general. Her name is, I think she says it Kamala, right? Which is
I think
odd.
She says Kamala, too.
Yeah, it's like Pamela with a K.
Yeah.
Kamala Harris.
Right.
And she's badass. I love her.
She's
great.
Awesome.
She's in California politics is sort of like considered like a big up and coming Democrat. She's often mentioned like as maybe going to be running for governor when Jerry Brown is no longer governor or either one of our Senate seats because both of our senators are sort of getting up in age and everybody loves her. Like she's great. She's sort of very liberal. So that would be her problem getting through there. And also because
California Democrat.
Right, because she's up and coming, do you really sort of like want to get like a younger, you know, star, you know, dragged through like a terrible confirmation
process?
Right,
and especially because it would sort of cut short her California political trajectory.
Right, exactly. Because she's our first African-American and Asian-American. She's mixed race.
Right.
attorney general. And she's just sort of like, people really love her. I mean, she was sort of like, she did one of the first gay marriages after, you know, I mean, like, she's just sort of as like, for a state attorney general who oftentimes like,
is an irrelevant,
person. She is a person that
she's
like
a big,
people know.
She's a big politician, like a known politician in California.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
She had a bit of a scandal. She's probably, she's one of the better looking attorney generals out there, and Obama said as much.
Yeah, if you have heard of her, this is probably why.
Right. There was a bit of an issue because Obama called her the best looking attorney general out there.
he was at a fundraiser out here, I think, she was at it, and that was
which got him in a little bit of hot water.
Yeah. She's very pretty.
She's very pretty, but that's something you would only say about a female.
Yeah.
So that's where that trouble came from.
There's some other random names
There's some random people
who
that are
like, I didn't...
Like, do people just name rent, like... Like, are these names being floated by these people's people?
Yeah,
like,
I don't know.
Who are these people?
I don't know. But there's, like, you know, a former White House counsel and, like, some district attorney from some place in New York and the Homeland Security Secretary and, I mean...
Right.
Nobody
like, every person who has
that,
a position in an administration somewhere
and
is a lawyer.
Or, yeah, exactly, is a lawyer. That's just,
That's...
So, anyway. But that'll be interesting because that's gonna be dramatic.
Yes.
I think so. Big time.
I think it could be quite dramatic. I feel like he could make a bold choice here because
That's
it's his
the
last
thing.
2 years. Who
Especially
cares?
Especially if the Republicans do take back the Senate. Like, let's just fucking have it out.
Yeah, make
with, like,
them
just pick the wackiest person that you can pick and then, like,
why they can't
just...
have Deval Patrick be the Attorney General.
Exactly.
Like, make him say it.
Yeah, he's, like, a two-term governor from, like, a real state. Like,
right.
what's his... Who is also, like, worked in the Justice Department. I mean,
right.
like, what's
like,
your damage with him?
Exactly.
You
what
know?
Are you gonna... He's,
right,
like,
besides being black and
yeah.
a Democrat. I mean, you can't
like, that's
not
all that
confirm
there is.
Somebody because of that.
But no, you can't. That's the law.
Try.
They will try. But
they will.
But you might as well make him say it.
Yeah, right.
In the years before a presidential election.
Yeah, but if I know him, he'll do something safe.
I know. Yeah. He's the worst about making statements.
He really is.
I just wish that he was he had more of a sort of dramatic flair.
Yeah. He may have made an accidental statement with a story that was completely ridiculous, but it was all the rage for, like, a whole day's news cycle.
This is the kind of story that, like, Fox News just really just, like, blew out about.
Mm-hmm.
Just couldn't handle themselves. It's not a story that if you read the New York Times, you probably read about.
Probably not.
You know? If you were reading the Times that day...
Or if you did, it was about how ridiculous.
Right. Like, you probably... You maybe saw this headline and you were like, nah, I don't know.
Yeah.
And you moved on. Here's what happened. Obama... Yeah. Was getting out of Marine One.
Yes.
That's his helicopter, right?
Yes, it is.
And he saluted the Marines, as he does, I guess, as presidents are doing since Reagan, we learned. Apparently, the hand that he used to salute them was holding a cup of coffee. So he saluted them with a cup of, or not, we don't know if it was coffee.
A cup of something. He doesn't drink much coffee, apparently.
He doesn't drink much coffee, so
it was probably tea.
Could have been tea.
Yeah.
Anyway, he saluted them with a cup, which immediately turned into a hashtag on Twitter, the latte salute hashtag.
Yeah.
And then the GOP got nuts about it because of the disrespect. Never mind that George Bush once saluted them with his dog.
Right, holding Barney.
Holding
his
Barney.
Black terrier.
Come on.
Like, at least the Democrats finally got around to, like, making sure people got that picture seen.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it took them a while. They were not on this.
But it's like nobody cared about that when he did it, because of course the Republicans love the troops.
No, of course.
Right?
Yes,
but
obviously.
This is just proof that Obama hates the troops and doesn't respect them.
He doesn't respect them.
But you know what? The whole thing about this is it pisses me off because A, it's just a ridiculous story anyway. Also, I mean,
he's their boss.
He's their boss. Like, he's the commander in chief. He could do whatever he wants when he gets
kick them as he wants by if he wants to.
Now that would probably actually show disrespect.
Right.
So you probably wouldn't
want to do that.
But they have to salute him. He does not have to salute them. Reagan started saluting the troops in 1981.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you
this
know.
This is a classic Reagan, like, image move.
Yeah. I mean, FDR wasn't saluting the troops when he was, you know, off fighting in World War II. I mean, like, this is just not a thing. Like, this is a new thing.
This is a new thing.
That we've decided to
this
do.
This is a post-Vietnam thing. We have not fought any sort of significant war except for the Iraq War with this
where
plan
this was
in place.
Yeah.
So, like, everyone, shut up.
Cool your jets.
Yeah. It's
yeah.
ridiculous.
Ugh, God.
But in any case, it led to something we'll talk about later. It led to a Sarah Palin moment.
Yeah,
I'll mention later. The other big story of this week, and this is the one that everyone was most excited about. Or not excited, but most fascinated by.
Yeah.
There was a beheading. Not an ISIS beheading.
No.
You're not in the Middle East.
No, in Oklahoma.
An Oklahoma beheading.
Yeah.
Where a 30-year-old ex-con got fired from a Vaughn Foods plant in Moore, Oklahoma. Stormed out. Gets to his car and drives to the main warehouse building.
He left the human resources building.
Right, he left the human resources building. Like, drives to the main plant's, like, warehouse building.
Yep.
Where he runs into this woman who's 54, Colleen Hufford.
Yep.
A 54-year-old grandmother.
Yep.
Brett and I did the math, and it's still possible for her to have been responsible.
Right. I reminded her that Mama June on Honey Boo Boo is my age at 33, and it's also a grandmother. So you're totally safe.
54
is to be a grandmother.
Yeah, no problem.
But,
and then, so he stabs this woman, and then beheads her.
Yeah, with a knife they use to, like, cut the
lettuce,
food and whatever at the plant. That's highly disturbing. And really unfortunate, obviously.
Yes.
I mean, we don't mean to totally make fun of this story because it's tragic.
It's,
but, I mean,
but it's creepy.
It's
very a creepy,
creepy
story.
And that's, of course, why everyone was so sort of like, you know, I mean, people are getting murdered all over the place.
Right.
But, I mean, like,
not everyone's getting beheaded.
Not everyone's getting beheaded.
You know where people are... Well, beheadings have been on the rise, though. That's been in the news.
Well, that's the thing.
People are beheading people all over the place. Because it's not just the Middle East where beheadings have been happening. Apparently, there's a beheading issue in, like, South America or somewhere that is also getting reported on, although less. So, we're just joining a trend in... A murder trend.
Right.
In which...
But, of course...
People disgustingly behead other people.
Obviously, this was because, A, he was fired...
Right.
And B, because he has a history of violence, and he's probably a little on the crazy side.
Yeah.
Because he had been in prison twice, once for marijuana possession, which, whatever.
It's a fake thing.
And then, but secondly, for, like, attacking a policeman.
Yeah.
Like, he was in for assault.
Right.
So, I mean, he's not exactly the person maybe that you really want working for you either.
No.
Anyway. But those are the reasons why this happened. But when he was last in prison, he converted, so he's a Muslim now, and... he had also apparently there were the word on the street at the plant was that he had been trying to get he had been trying to convert people.
Right.
So of course the right wing blogosphere flew off the handle because he instantly became like a secret jihadist.
Yes.
Basically, like the jihadis
hell bent on killing innocent Oklahoma grandmothers.
Right. Exactly. They've reached America.
Yes.
The jihadis, they are undercover working at food plants.
Right.
And they are beheading our grandmothers.
That's right.
That's what happened.
That's what happened.
It literally turned into that story.
Yeah.
I mean, and even
this was a wacky story to begin with.
Well, right.
So, like, to begin with the story of a man randomly beheading a poor, innocent grandmother is already a crazy place to begin.
Yes.
But when it took a turn into, like, him converting to Islam and therefore obviously being a jihadist.
Yeah.
If you commit a murder and you practice Islam, the only possible explanation for the murder is jihad.
Well, right, exactly.
You can't just be a mean, you know, Muslim.
No.
There's no such thing as like just a murderer who happens to be Muslim anymore. Like if you're like of any other religion and you murder somebody, you're just like a murderer.
Right, a Christian murderer is not a crusader.
Exactly. But for some a Muslim murderer is a jihadist. So that's how this story ended.
He's still alive.
He's still alive. So he got shot. He stabbed one other person and then got shot and was taken to the hospital.
But
he's still alive.
The Mora police have already said that this has no ties to terrorism or
they can't seem
whatever.
To find any connection.
The FBI
connection.
Is involved because of
this is a crazy
because it was crazy. Right, exactly. And also because of the people saying that he was
right.
I'm assuming that they probably look into sort of like anything like that because on some level I guess it makes sense even though it sort of annoys me. But I mean so
also if anyway. I were the FBI and there was a well-publicized murder of any sort,
well,
I would get involved.
Yeah.
And I'm not the FBI, so I don't know what their operating procedure is, but that's what I feel like they do.
My guess is that more Oklahoma probably needs a little help, too.
I would imagine their murder detectives are not like...
No, they're not used to this.
You know, they don't have like a Columbo over there to solve these crimes.
They don't.
I really reached back for that one, too. Columbo.
I know, you just pulled that
from
nowhere.
I almost went with Poirot, and then I was like...
Who?
See, that's why I didn't do that one.
You made the right split decision.
Didn't you watch Mystery? As a child with your mother? That's what you do with your mother when you're a child.
No.
You watch Mystery. He's an Agatha Christie
detective. Never watched this.
No. Yeah. Poirot. Hercule Poirot. He has a funny mustache.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
That's a great name, too.
Yeah.
I feel like I'd like that.
He's a great detective. He's who you want.
I see.
I mean, it seems like murder follows him wherever he goes, so you don't really want to be around him pre-murder. But if the murder strikes, he would be a good person to call. You want him on the case.
All right,
exactly.
Got it.
Yeah. Okay. Also, in the aftermath of the big protest that happened last weekend in New York, the thing that they were having the rally to prep for was the UN climate summit. And so Obama spoke this week at the UN about the climate situation.
I think it was fairly well received.
Yeah,
I mean, it's sort of
generically good speech, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean,
I don't have much to report to you on that.
No, he sort of, you know, he acknowledged that he was just wanting basically. His whole point was that it's a whole world problem.
Yeah.
You know, he acknowledged America's fault in it.
Yeah.
But he was like, you know, we can't, other countries who are sort of like going through the phases of becoming industrialized, which there are a lot of right now, sort of have to learn from our mistakes. Like, yes, we caused a lot of it.
Right.
And like,
but
you know,
now
we use
we
more
know...
energy than everyone. Like, we get all of those things. But like, we sort of have to, you know, we have to have the help of China and we have to have, you know, the African nations who are sort of industrializing right now, like have to, you know, they have to have learned from our mistakes.
Yeah.
So it was sort of just like a plea to the entire world, you know, claiming that America will do our part, but like we all need to sort of like, yeah, exactly.
Get our shit together.
Yeah. So it obviously must have been a good speech because the Kochs were pissed.
Yes.
And they fundraised immediately off of it. And they like sent out emails that had subjects like Obama's UN speech promises to kill jobs and raise energy prices. So like
that's exactly what he promised to do.
Yeah, exactly. That's what he said.
I'm here to tell you that America's plan to combat, you know, increasing greenhouse gases.
Well,
Kill jobs and raise energy prices.
Right. And it doesn't obviously have to do either of those things. That's a ridiculous thing to say to someone. But also, if he came to me and gave me a plea and said the only way that we can make sure the world doesn't disintegrate is to raise energy prices and kill some jobs, I'd be like, well, okay. It's a small price to pay for our children to keep living.
The other thing, though, is the kill jobs thing is really disingenuous because the green economy really stands to create a lot of jobs.
Tons.
Because there's so much research that has to be done, and there's so much, like, innovation that has to come out of this. So, like, this is not... Raising energy prices? Maybe. Maybe that will happen. The killing jobs thing is not the sort of obvious end to this.
Coke jobs.
Exactly. By killing jobs, we mean killing old-fashioned jobs. It doesn't kill the number of jobs available to people in America.
Right.
That's where this sort of is misleading. Also, they're jerks. Let's just say it.
Come on.
Let's just call a spade a spade.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's a kind of weird situation happening right now in China, where there are these, like, massive student protests going on in Hong Kong. There was some sort of plan to make Hong Kong into a democracy, or to have elections in Hong Kong in 2017. And then Beijing sort of, like, released this plan, and it fell very short of actually being a democracy. I think Hong Kong has sort of, like, always been a kind of weird political entity, because it was a colony, and then it was sort of, like, independent for a while. And I think now it's sort of, like, Beijing is sort of calling the shots there, but it's governed in a different way than the rest of China is governed. And so basically what happened was they wanted to have, like, a full democracy, like a traditional thing where you vote for people that run. But what happened instead was that there would be universal suffrage in 3 years, but all of the candidates would have to be approved by some Beijing committee that is dominated by sort of mainland Chinese people.
Yeah, which is not what...
Which is not what... I mean, that's the wrong word, maybe, because they're not Taiwan. They're sort of on mainland China, but, you know, regular China.
Yeah.
Beijing China. non-British China.
Right.
But so in any case, they're sort of having, like... their Arab Spring.
Yeah.
They have a group called Occupy Central.
Nice.
And then another group called, I think, Scholarism, that have been just waging protest war for days now.
Yeah,
and
they're
huge protests.
Yeah.
They've gotten a little out of hand. I think of late they told everyone to retreat because things were getting a little dangerous and people started getting injured. But there's been, like, tear gas and rubber bullets, and there are these weird shots of all of the Hong Kong police, like, riding the subway to get to the protest. Like, that's how they transported the police to the protest. So protesters started barricading the subway entrances and exits. Like, that's the plan to get them to the protest.
That's it.
Get on the subway, guys. It goes right there.
Yeah.
Like, so weird. So, in any case, it's fascinating because no one fully understands what's going on. But also, it's interesting to see China now getting swept up into this sort of Occupy / Arab Spring fervor.
Yep.
Only a few years late.
Right,
and only in Hong Kong.
Hey.
But it's exciting nonetheless.
It's never too late.
There's a new Clinton on the loose.
That's right.
Chelsea Clinton had her baby on Friday. She named the baby, it's a girl, named Charlotte Clinton Mezvinsky.
Like,
I said something controversial.
It wasn't. It was, but it wasn't.
Yeah. Because I feel bad a lot of the time for the Shrivers. Because I feel like
they
got robbed
they lost the
glory of being Kennedys.
Of Kennedys. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I feel like if you are a Clinton and you are part of a dynasty that is not trying to really call itself a dynasty, but is and everyone knows it, give the baby the name Clinton.
Right.
Doesn't matter who the mother and father are.
And on top of that, give the baby the last name Clinton just so it doesn't have the last name
Mezvinsky. That's too hard to say.
Nobody wants that last name.
That's a terrible last name.
It's the worst.
No, I would even... It would be fine with me if they named the baby Charlotte Mezvinsky Clinton.
Sure.
Because then you could cut out the Mezvinsky. Nobody's any the wiser.
Right.
But, like,
exactly. You'd have to be a little embarrassed, like, growing up that your middle name was so ridiculous.
Right.
But, I mean...
My middle name is Strauss, which is a weird middle name, and I've lived through it.
You managed.
I managed.
Yeah.
I realized recently, because I did not know, in the Midwest, apparently, there was a department store called Strauss's. So it turns out I have a double department store...
Oh, wow.
Last name.
I didn't know that. I've never heard of that either.
Yeah, no, it's in Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
Strauss's.
Middle East.
Yeah, the Middle East. Mm-hmm. Strauss's department store or whatever it was.
Who knew?
It turns out my whole name is department stores.
Yeah. Is there a Lila's out there somewhere?
Well, if there's not, there's room for one. Because if there's one thing we know, it's that you can have a successful department store with one of my names. So in any case, congratulations, Chelsea Clinton.
Yeah.
I'm sure the world is...
Excited.
Ready, excited for yet another Clinton on the loose.
Yeah. Oh, boy. The economy news.
Here, it's really boring. I opened this article and I was like, oh, no.
But it's good boring
it's good news.
Yeah.
Things are going well, guys.
Right.
The economy is growing.
It's growing at a steady clip.
That's
a healthy
right.
clip.
A healthy clip.
A more healthy clip than
After
it was.
After a super unhealthy winter, this spring grew at a healthy clip. Right. At 4.6%.
Right. It dropped, like, after the winter, it had, like, a drop of 2.1%. Right. And now, in the second quarter, spring, it was, like you said, 4.6. So everybody's so
2.5 in the black.
Solid rebound.
That's right. That's apparently the fastest pace in more than 2 years, although since it follows one of the most dramatic drops in the last, like, eight years, I don't know how that evens out. Like, but apparently we're supposed to expect pretty solid growth for the rest of the year. Nobody really understands what that means in terms of, like, actual tangible things that happen in their lives.
No.
But it's, I guess, good to know nonetheless. And then we're supposed to not expect it to be so volatile moving forward either.
Yeah.
Again, not sure how that helps or doesn't help.
I know. Something. Well, that's the thing. Oh, there was this project that I was working on for work that I was telling you about. It's called We the Economy. I'll plug it just because it does actually sound interesting. I wasn't working on it, which I was very frustrated with because
Brent
I
was curious about that.
I am working on a launch spot for the Real Housewives of Atlanta right now. While someone who doesn't know anything about anything is, bless her heart, I love her. But, you know, about the economy is like working on this thing. It's like 20 documentaries by like 20 filmmakers and like Morgan Spurlock is sort of like heading it and it's like whatever. About the economy. It's called We the Economy. And it's just sort of like explaining like all the different things. Like, you know, there's like a one about healthcare. It's also with like mostly famous filmmakers too. And they're mostly like short documentaries, not in full length, obviously. But like, and they're going to be released on like all the digital platforms or whatever. You know, it's supposed to be like some big hoo ha event, whatever. But I was talking to my coworker who was running this project, who I do love. And she was like, there's one that was like really terrifying where this guy was like talking about like how money isn't anything and the economy is like, man. And I was like, yes!
I was like,
he should have talked to us.
Right? We've been hawking that for years.
Right.
So we gotta watch that.
I know.
Stat.
Well, I'll have to ask her which one it was.
We gotta
find that. But anyway,
find
that could be interesting.
Plug it.
If the economy is a thing that you're interested in, that's coming to a digital platform near you soon.
Right. And you might get confirmation that the economy is imaginary.
Yeah.
It's made up of things we invented.
That's right.
Which we have told you previously.
Yeah. But one person who is not doing so well in the
economy right now,
or so he claims, is Emeril Lagasse.
Yeah. Apparently, if you are a celebrity restaurateur and TV personality...
It's rough out there.
It's rough out there right now, yeah.
Yeah.
He somehow thought... He kept saying that all this Obama nonsense was responsible.
Yes.
I think he was talking about Obamacare. It's not...
I don't know what he was talking about. No one knows. But he's like, he's on a show right now. He's on this TNT food show.
Let me tell you one thing I'm 100% certain of. Emeril Lagasse's doing just fine.
He can't be that strapped for
cash. He's not that strapped for cash.
Maybe nobody's going to his restaurants, but they also might be terrible.
Also,
no one knows.
Here's the thing. Emeril's restaurants are all like 1 trillion years old. Like, they're over.
Right.
I've been to several Emeril restaurants. The food's very good. That's great. But like, his scene is diminishing. Like, that's...
Yeah.
That is a problem with running a restaurant for a long period of time. You can't maintain outrageous success forever.
But the man has an empire. I mean,
the man
has
an empire.
He has. You can buy his foods at the grocery store.
Yeah.
He has his own cookware line. He's on a television show right now. I know that
he
co-hosts Top Chef. Like, he should not be worried about things.
No.
So
he's not.
Anyway, but he said. Yeah, he was talking about like how hard it was, and then he said, and then you add all the Obama nonsense to what it's becoming in the last several years, and then clarified, I don't have anything against Obama, but he said, I'm just saying the way that, you know, the government should stay out of things. They can't do what they do. They can't do
what they,
what
do,
they
right.
do right.
Never mind what I'm doing.
Right. So that doesn't
what
make
does that
any sense.
Mean?
But
and
anyway.
Then he goes on to say he doesn't have a political side, but then goes on some weird speech about how we should all just band together to save the little guy, which apparently is him.
He's the little guy.
He was sort of threatening that we would just if the service industry keeps going this way with all this Obama nonsense. That's why I think he was talking about Obamacare.
If anybody is attempting to band together to help the little guy, it would be Obama slash the Democrats.
Right. That's not what he's talking about.
I mean, Rand Paul is just going to let you die on the vine.
I love. I love that he went on for about how we were only going to the only food establishments that were going to be able to survive this are fast food and high end dining. The middle ground restaurants will not survive.
Well, that is a thing.
That's a possibility.
I think we talked about that one time because, like, all the, like, Red Lobsters and Olive Gardens, which people probably think is
I think of that as fast food, but...
Right, but,
America thinks of that as...
I mean, it's more expensive than, obviously, something that you get at the dollar menu. So it really is
mid-range
sort of, like, the
dining
ground.
Option.
And they're really struggling right now, and a lot of people are sort of, like, seeing that as a sign that, like, the middle class is, like, can't afford to, like, go eat out right now.
Yeah, no, that is very likely true. Here's a person that could only benefit from that. Emeril Lagasse, a man who owns a chain of fine dining restaurants that is extensive and varied and exists all over the place.
Yeah.
I am not even a little bit worried about him.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any mid-range restaurants to worry about.
No.
His empire will remain intact.
Yeah.
But he also sort of, like, said something about, like, food is, the cost of food's going up and fuel and all these things. And I was like,
these aren't Obama's fault. No.
I mean,
the cost of food is going up because there's droughts. And the weather is crazy. So many things contribute to those things that don't have anything to do with
anything.
Like, the actual economy and sort of the state of it. I mean, that's just, you know, there are other things that affect those things. Oh, boy. Oh, God.
We have some bad news for everyone.
So we've been talking a lot recently about what the Senate outlook is, and we've been sort of giving you a lot of updates, and it doesn't look good for the Democrats. But one state that was sort of either at least leaning Democrat or was sort of, like, most recently considered a toss-up is now, it's Iowa, my home state, and in the latest Des Moines Register poll, Joni Ernst is ahead by 6 points over Bruce Braley.
That is sad
news. Now, there's 12% of people who are undecided, but go figure, guess what the biggest problem for him is? It's that statement that he made about Chuck Grassley in regards to, you know,
being a farmer. He sort of called him an uneducated farmer.
Right, he's losing like 4-1 or something like that, like in rural areas.
Yeah, because there's farmers there.
That's where the farmers are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just a testament to how dumb it is to have a dumb, like a middle ground candidate the way that they... Right, you know, this is Tom Harkin's seat. They could have run somebody who was a little bit closer to Tom Harkin in terms of kind of like temperament and outlook. And I think maybe he wouldn't have won, but he certainly wouldn't have fallen into this kind of trap.
Right.
Like, he would have excited a base that was already voting for Tom Harkin.
Well, and I also think that this is a prime example, and in reference, we've been talking a lot about this to Hillary lately.
Yeah.
He did not have to run in a primary.
Yeah.
Everybody just got out of the man's way,
mm-hmm.
and then he just went on a crazy talking spree where he said a ton of ridiculous things. I mean, this was not the only thing that he said that sort of, like, he caught some flack for. So, I mean, it's never good to, like, go into a very hotly contested race when you've never had to be in a hotly contested election before.
And where all of the things that get dug up about you are new. Like, there's nothing new, you know, there's nothing that you can sort of be like, okay, we've already discussed X, Y, and Z. I get it. Here's what I said about it. Move on. Like, you don't ever get to the point where you can just, like, throw that stuff behind you and, like, talk about issues. Because all of the dumb shit that you would do in the primary and get behind you, you're doing right now in front of everyone.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, exactly. And this, I mean, there are a lot of undecided people in this poll, but, like, you know, a lot of people, I read, you know, some response to this, like, why, you know, this poll is so different than all the other polls that show it as a dead heat or whatever. But, like, the Des Moines Register knows how to poll its people.
Yeah.
It's a thing that they are good at.
Right.
Because they've had a lot of practice at it. And, like, they are always the ones who, like, everybody waits, you hear stories about it, waiting to hear, like, the Des Moines Register poll that comes out, like, the day or two, like, before the Iowa caucuses, because the caucuses are, like, always hard to poll, because you don't know what's going to happen once everybody gets in the room. But inevitably, the Des Moines Register, like, somehow, like, magically,
they
like,
knows
through some sort of, like, psychic ability, like, what everyone is thinking. So, I'm, even though this is different than all of the other polls...
This is the one that you're...
This is the right one, which is what's scary, because...
It's depressing. It's depressing. The most depressing of the polls.
Now, my mom was telling me, actually, they're debating right now.
Oh.
So...
That's
hopefully, I mean...
Exciting. Or not.
Hopefully, she will just crazy herself into it. I mean, she
but
had to say...
they're both terrible. That's
they're both
a
terrible.
Problem.
That's a problem.
Don't run a terrible person for a good person's seat. That's a, the number one rule of politics is don't replace a good person with a terrible person.
I know.
I mean, for God's sakes, people.
Come on.
It's like I have to tell them everything.
Yeah.
I was saying that this was something that I would never have once cared about if I didn't know Brent. And Brent has also been, like, drawn into a whole bunch of, like... pro Gillibrand nonsense and all sorts of stuff. It's all just because he knows me. I would otherwise have never even had a thought about Tom Harkin's seat.
Yeah.
I would have just been like, oh, that's sad. Moving on.
You might have in this election.
In this
cycle,
election, I might have.
Yeah.
I might have never in any sense. I might have known nothing else about Iowa politics, though,
right.
until right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Guys, the Value Voter Summit was this week.
God.
And that's everything.
It's just always the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah,
I mean,
that is everything.
It's just. If you don't know what it is, it's just, it's an event, it's a summit, as the name indicates.
Where only the craziest Republican candidates get together.
Where the values voters come to play.
Exactly.
Which is the craziest. It should just be called, like, the Evangelical Wingnut Voter Summit.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
So, it draws just, like, some of the greatest Republican talent.
Right, exactly. Because it draws the crazy people speaking to crazy people so they can just go
full
crazy.
They can go full crazy.
Yeah. They don't have to mince their words with these people. In fact, they would be wrong to do so.
They would be wrong to do so.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there was an article because, oddly, like, Rand Paul came this year to the... I mean, he's part of this sort of caucus, sort of.
Yeah.
But, like, he's also a libertarian, so it's a little confusing. But he's very conservative socially. And
right.
This sort of, like, there was an article comparing how he and Ted Cruz sort of, like, how their styles differed as they talked to these crowds. And, like, it was... Like, Rand Paul came and, like, wore a suit and was, like, responsible and, you know,
yeah.
whatever. And just looked
he's
like...
He's trying to act like a president.
He's trying to act like a
Even
president.
He's
trying
to
act like a general person. But, like, Ted Cruz came in and talked to them like an evangelist. And the fact that he was, like, so blatantly pandering to them
yeah.
in, like, such obvious
and
terms
loved it,
didn't faze them for a second.
No.
Was
they were
just
super
like a,
into it.
Was super into
well, they're
it.
Idiots.
Well, they're idiots, yeah. But it's sort of funny because it makes him less enticing as a candidate to literally every other person that was not at that summit.
Right.
So it's, like, sort of an interesting thing.
Yeah.
In any case, as you might imagine, Bobby Jindal was there.
Oh, yes.
That's the first and most important thing.
Classic.
Because if there's one person who can be trusted to come to a gathering of wingnuts, it's always Bobby Jindal.
Mm-hmm.
He made some, like, weird comment about basically, like, that, you know... Whether or not we share political values or whatever isn't that important. It's the cultural value. It's the fact that we don't all believe in the same God, basically, that's ruining this nation.
Yeah.
It's the culture stupid, is
yeah,
what he said.
That's what he, yeah, he turned yeah. the Clinton, it's the economy stupid
right.
thing into it's the culture stupid.
Right.
Which, if that's what he intends to run on, then God bless him.
Yeah, go for that. Do it.
Do that.
Yeah, he said, capitalism and free enterprise will fail in a country where people don't respect the rule of law, they don't care for each other, they don't share a common view of the dignity of all mankind as God's creation.
Ah, yes.
Put simply, culture matters.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Real touching sentiment from Bobby Jindal.
God. Exorcist specialist.
Exorcist specialist Bobby Jindal. I know, the culture that he's referring to has often left him behind.
It really has.
I don't know what, you know...
Yeah.
So, in any case, Ted Cruz also came, as we said,
mm-hmm.
Had some exciting nuggets of crazy that he delivered to the crowd.
Yeah.
He suggested that Hillary Clinton be forced to debate the Little Sisters of the Poor, who's the group that challenged the contraception ban for the Affordable Care Act, the contraception mandate by the,
yeah.
for the Affordable Care Act. He wanted them to face off face-to-face, like, have
yes.
a debate. He said, as for me, I'll stand with the nuns.
Of course.
Mm,
yes.
Touching. He repeatedly referred to birth control as abortion-inducing drugs. Not the same thing, guys. Not the same thing. That is not...
That is brilliant.
That is not a thing. And if Republicans are doing this. This is, like, a thing
yeah.
that's happening. But, like, scientists have even investigated this claim, which is a ridiculous thing for them to waste their time on.
Yeah, it is.
And unsurprisingly have discovered that... Birth control is not an abortion, is not inducing even tiny abortions. It's not inducing any kind of abortions. But so, in any case, as he went on about how Hillary and the Little Sisters of the Poor should have a debate or whatever, he kept referring to birth control as abortion-inducing
yeah.
drugs. And also sort of, like, misunderstood what that court challenge was about in the first place.
Shocker.
Which is, yeah, is not surprising. Yeah. He went with a classic... call to abolish the IRS.
Ah, yes. Everyone loves that one.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big applause line.
Yeah, big applause line. I don't know.
It's a big laugh line,
like,
too.
If we abolish the IRS, does he see himself getting paid for this great service that he does to the for
I
the nation?
Know.
Like, where... How does it happen? How does it all happen after that?
Don't know.
It's a curious plan, considering he's someone who's in...
It's a
non-plan, yeah. Also, he won... This is a new thing that people have been saying that is sort of hilarious. Because Common Core is sort of a controversial concept to begin with. I mean, I have issues with Common Core.
Yeah, sure.
You know, everyone who's a
thinker
does.
Yeah.
And people who aren't thinkers. Because Ted Cruz also thinks that we should repeal it. It's not a law, so you can't repeal it. We can't... it's something that the administration has encouraged states to adopt
right.
as their own. But it's only been implemented on the state level. So it's not
yeah.
possible for Congress to repeal it.
Yeah.
But Ted Cruz would like to try. He'd like to see if he can make that happen.
Yep.
On the laundry list of things that he said that the Senate would do, that the conservatives would do if they took control of the Senate, it was like, we stand for life, we stand for marriage, we stand for Israel.
Yes.
Those are the three things.
Yes.
Life, marriage, and Israel.
Hey, why not?
Like, what
so
a
crazy.
Weird trio of things.
Well, and that's the thing, like, well, and someone, was not me, who noticed this, but this has been going on, the Values Voter Summit has been going on for, like, I think, like, 10 years or something right. like that. And almost every year, because they always do it in the fall, it has fallen on either Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur. And the Republicans, especially in our current climate right now, have really been sort of, like,
driving
home
this Israel thing.
The Israel thing, because of what's going on, you know, with Middle East politics right now. And they really have claimed to have seen this as, like, a big opportunity to, like, siphon off some of the Jewish vote from that, you know, who typically votes Democrat.
Yeah.
And, like, having this...
Having this on a major Jewish holiday is not usually the plan.
It's not the plan.
It's not the plan.
No.
He also, by the way, in case you were nervous about this, promised to keep repealing Obamacare.
Oh, yeah.
He's just going to
keep
that.
Every word of it,
every
right?
word of it. Yeah, no, every word.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because if you leave even one word, you don't know what that could grow into.
Yeah.
This is the genius who won the straw poll, by the way.
Yes, of course.
This year. He got 25% of the vote, which is a lot of the vote,
a
considering
lot.
That every person in America was voting.
Polled. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, there were 25 people on the list, but mm-hmm. Democrats were included on the list, so that they could then rank them at the bottom of the list. That's all that they were there for.
Right.
But some curious things happened. First of all, I still don't really understand who Ben Carson is, but he keeps winning these fucking polls.
I know.
He came in second with 20% of the vote. He's just some crazy wingnut doctor.
He's a doctor. He was a
He's
doctor.
He's an actual doctor.
Who, like, got brought in to, like, say a prayer at, like, the prayer breakfast.
Yeah.
Like, for the president. And then, like, said, like, a bunch of really inflammatory things, like, in the prayer.
Right.
That were, like, you know, directed at the president, basically.
Right.
So, like, everyone then sort of, like, he just became, like, an instant hero.
He's
like
a folk hero.
Yeah, he's a folk hero.
He's a Republican folk hero who's, like,
no political experience
in these polls.
He's a doctor.
Yeah. Crushing it in the polls.
I mean,
this is not the first...
All Rand Paul's just a doctor, too, for that
matter.
Well,
that's true. But he's a doctor who's currently serving
that's
in,
right.
yeah, you know, exactly. a government capacity. Like, this is not...
Right. But until he was a United States senator, he
that's
was
true.
An optometrist.
That's true. He was a nobody. I also feel like... Like, Rand Paul is Ron Paul's son. So,
that's
like,
true.
He's like a
cred
he's part
there.
Of a dynasty.
Right.
You know, Ben Carson is a rando
yeah.
who got 20% of the vote at this
right.
summit. This is not, there are other conservative summits that he has been at, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was one, I think, a few months ago. I can't remember which one, but he won a straw poll there. Like, he's winning
well,
things.
I think Republicans also love to say that they love him because, and this, you know,
he's an outsider.
He's an outsider, and this also might be a terrible thing to say. I don't know, but whatever. He's black.
Right, yeah. It's sort of their one hope at not...
He's their sort of, like, look at this crazy conservative wingnut black guy.
Yeah.
You know, that, like...
No, he's sort of like a token guy to them. And they always
yeah.
sort of manage to propel one person to sort of take all the heat for them.
Yeah.
With some act of tokenism. It's so
yeah.
crazy how they always pull that off. I mean, that's what they were trying to do to Bobby Jindal.
Oh, yeah,
and
totally.
It didn't work because he turned out to be too crazy, and
yeah.
people didn't
well,
like.
The same
it.
Thing is going to happen.
The same thing's going to happen
I mean,
to Ben Carson. But I mean, it's like it's a bad sign when
right.
you have to sort of like sort of promote like a token guy
right.
instead of having a base that would support a candidate who's African American. Like
right.
it just doesn't.
The thing
it
about
doesn't
Ben
work.
The thing about Ben Carson is that you know he keeps getting sort of like in the 20 to 30 to even sometimes 40 range at these straw polls or whatever.
Yeah,
20 to 30% of the Republican base are the only people
on Earth
in. Yeah, the universe
heard of him.
Who have either A, heard of him, or B, would even after they have heard of him, think about voting for him.
Yeah.
So, he's of no concern to anyone.
No, he's not of any concern to anyone. He also won an independent straw poll that was going, or a separate straw poll that was going on at the Value Voter Summit for vice president.
Oh.
He won the vice presidential straw poll.
Oh, I see.
Let him be the Sarah Palin of the next election cycle,
totally.
P.S. I mean,
yeah.
let's do it, guys.
Yeah, she was there too, by the way.
Yeah.
We'll get to that
yeah.
in a second.
Mike Huckabee came in third with 12%.
Mm-hmm.
Rick Santorum finished fourth. So it's just the same guys, always.
Yeah.
Bobby Jindal and Rand Paul tied for fifth.
Mm.
Marco Rubio finished sixth, so he's irrelevant at this point. Mitt Romney finished eighth.
Sure.
Then a weird thing happened. Joe Biden finished 18th.
Uh-huh.
And then coming in right on his heels at 19th was Chris Christie.
Mm, yes.
And then Hillary Clinton finished it out at 23.
Which is interesting that Hillary Clinton didn't do a little bit better. I think it's probably because they spent the entire time trashing her because
yeah.
they're afraid that she's going to be the nominee, so they
I'm,
have to trash
yeah,
her.
Yeah, I'm shocked she didn't get the actual last place.
Well, right.
Like, who
yeah.
was the who else was on the list?
I know.
Like, was, like, a communist on the list after? Was, like, Bernie Sanders on the list? Like,
maybe.
What?
Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth Warren?
Probably.
Like, that, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't...
I hate her.
Like, what, who did they put below the Value Voters Summit? There's nothing they like
me.
Better than trashing Hillary Clinton. Like,
yeah.
who else was on the list that they hated
yeah.
more? It's curious.
Yeah, it really is curious.
But in any case, they always have the best straw polls at these things.
Yeah, they really do.
They really love it.
Oh, boy.
Sarah Palin also made an appearance, as you
she
might
did.
Imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Tried... She she acted like she was sort of wisecracking up a storm. It turned out that almost nothing she said was that clever.
Well, but the, that's the thing.
I mean, that's a problem with her usually. But sometimes she has clever one-liners, and she didn't deliver anything hilarious this time. What she did deliver was a lack of knowledge of the White House address that every school child in America knows. She accidentally said that the White House was at 1400 Pennsylvania Avenue, which is not where it is.
Right.
It's at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Yeah. So that was curious.
She also gave the president a salute with a styrofoam cup.
Yes.
See, this is why I do love Sarah
Palin. Yeah, no, that was because, like, that was her moment of glory there, because it all went downhill from there.
It really did, once she had to start talking, which is normally what happens. But I mean, like, here's the thing about Sarah Palin. When she goes to these things, a lot of times I have a feeling that she hasn't even really, like, prepared a speech.
No, yeah.
Like, she's just, like, a person who just, like, likes to hear the sound of her own voice, and for whatever reason, other people like to hear the sound of her own voice, too. So she doesn't even really have to, she doesn't even have to say things. She normally doesn't. I mean, usually she's just, it's like just like some sort of word salad anyway. Right. Just like she's dropped a bucket of words and then picked them up in some random order that then come out of her mouth. That's usually what happens with her, and everybody just loves it. So, like, you know, she doesn't have to say anything smart. Like, at a certain point, like, she's just words are spewing forth from her. That's it.
Yeah. But so she tried to ding the president on, you know, how he didn't want to be at war before, and now he's sort of, like, going back to bombing and, you know, after trashing W's war.
Yeah.
He's sort of like, get a life, people. In any case, Michelle Bachmann was there as well. You might remember Michelle Bachmann as a woman who once hid in the bushes during a pro-gay marriage rally of some sort. Right. Spying.
Also the leading presidential candidate.
You might
at one point.
Right, I mean, you might remember her from the last election cycle as But I mean, what you might in the context of this story, what you might remember about her is that she's someone who was so vehemently against gay marriage and just gays in general.
Right.
That she once, like, spied on a gay marriage rally
then also
from the bushes.
One.
And then also unknowingly married a gay man. Apparently now, however, she finds the whole issue a little boring. That's her word, not mine. She was asked during an interview on Friday whether, you know, what, you know, her thoughts about gay marriage are these days.
Sure.
And she said, it's not an issue. In fact, it's boring. She also told Meghan McCain that in an interview earlier that, you know, things are changing and blah, blah, blah. And that really incensed a lot of the hardliners at the Value Voters Summit who were sort of like, we've got to just band together. We can't give up. If pro-gay marriage people had given up, they wouldn't have been able to overturn all of the laws that we got passed. They didn't give up, and neither can we.
Mm-hmm.
Like, get a life.
Come on, people.
Don't give up. Just get over it.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, another guy was there who, I don't even know who this guy is, but he's some
Marlon Stutzman?
Yeah. I mean,
is it Stutzman or Stutzman, do you
It's
think?
Probably Stutzman.
Yeah, let's be honest.
Anyway, he's from some Republican from Indiana, congressman, wove this, like, great story about, like, this woman who almost had an abortion and, you know, how the grandmother had to come in and talk her into not getting the abortion. And then the big twist ending was that it was his mother that almost had the abortion.
He was almost aborted.
He was almost aborted, which is, you know, a thing that a lot of people are, you know, I mean, I knew a girl who was adopted who, you know, sort of wove the same story, which I get is a personal story. Like, that it's great that you were sort of able to happen.
You personally were not aborted.
Right.
It doesn't really mean
anything.
You would not know that that was the case if you had been aborted, so it wouldn't have been an issue for you then. Like, it's not like there's just, like...
And you wouldn't have known whether you were aborted or not.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
You would have never found out.
Yeah.
That's, I think, the important point that we miss when we talk to adults who talk about almost having been aborted.
Yeah.
Like, is you...
Right.
You wouldn't... If you had been aborted, this wouldn't have been an issue for you because you would have never found out about it. God. It's just such a, like, weird story to tell. Also, it opens the door to a lot of jokes about him.
Obviously.
Come on.
I mean, like...
Don't tell that story.
No, you... we don't even have to tell you what the jokes
are. No, you know the jokes.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to go through the trouble.
Yeah.
But in any case, and then Rand Paul also spoke about his pro-lifeness, and that the reason he's pro-life is because sometimes it was he like told some story where like how like sometimes babies can be seen sucking their thumbs during ultrasounds, why I'm against abortion. It's like
what
a sort of like non-sentient being sucking its thumb that's not like able to live independently. Like that's not a reason to like fetuses do human-like things because they are little humans. Like that, that's they're forming to be humans. Like that's what they're up to in there.
Yeah.
This is not. Okay. I don't want to hear that argument anymore.
Yeah.
Like fetuses doing cute things is not.
No.
A thing.
No. It's definitely not.
Republicans need to stop talking about that as a talking point for why abortion can't happen.
It's ridiculous.
Like, fetuses are so adorable, though, and they suck their thumbs. Like, what? Shut up.
Yeah, now you just sound like a lunatic.
Exactly.
Speaking of Ben Carson and people sounding like lunatics, this was not at the Values Voters Summit, but he was... He was a man who was speaking out loud. He had other crazy things. He's on Fox News a lot. They love him over at Fox News. And he's concerned that there's not actually going to be an election in 2016 because anarchy will have just erupted all over the country.
The reason
that
anarchy is going to have erupted keeps changing with the times.
Yes.
Earlier this year, he told Chris Wallace, or he told someone at Fox News that that this was going to happen and the elections would be canceled. And so Chris Wallace asked him if he stood by this comment.
Right. Yes, he did.
And then, he stood by it, and for a different reason than last time. Like, you know, that now it's because of the national debt.
Yes, there's
going to
be
ISIS
anarchy because
and,
of the national debt.
Yeah, like,
I mean,
he keeps changing his mind. here's an important note for all of you listeners, however. We've somehow managed to hold presidential elections every 4 years since 1788. So somehow, that includes we held them during the Civil War, we held them during the World War II, we held them during the Vietnam War, we held them during the Great Depression. All of the major events that you can imagine happened in the last 300 years or whatever. Is that 300? That was not the right number of years.
No.
It was like 250. More than 200 years.
Yeah.
234. Years 234 years. We're getting up to 250. We're close. But all of these issues, all of these things that have happened have never resulted in us not holding a presidential election.
Right.
So I think that Ben Carson could take a break. Relax a little.
I have a question. Is it now, this might be a stupid question, and you can tell me if it is, but I've been obsessively watching the Roosevelts.
I know you have.
I've watched 5 of the 7 parts, and it's, I love it. I'm obsessed with it. But anyway, is it law now, maybe it's been passed into law now, that you can only run for 2 terms?
Yes.
Okay, because did you know for a while
it was a thing
because initially George Washington claimed that he wouldn't run for 2 terms, so nobody did it after that.
Yeah,
because Teddy Roosevelt came in after an assassination, and so
he ran for the next term,
and he could have sort of like technically run for the next term because he wasn't elected, so he could have like run. But after he was elected the first time.
Yeah.
So entering the first time that he was, actually elected, he claimed that he wasn't going to run again, and he always regretted it. And he actually ran as a third party later. But I didn't realize that was just like a thing that people were like choosing were not to do just because George Washington started this tradition.
He did it because he didn't want to be seen as like a monarch, right? Like he was trying to set this apart from being a monarchy. I think term limits were actually a Republican proposal that I don't remember when they sort of started to get enacted into law.
It wasn't in the Constitution or anything.
Right?
Like that.
No,
like
it's
initially,
not.
I just
it's
didn't
definitely
know.
A recent thing. There, I think, are presidents that have done 3 terms, aren't there?
I don't think so.
Not maybe not. There's definitely other types of office that now are term limited.
Right, of course.
Where people were doing that sort of thing. But I think it is officially term limited. And I think for a long time, everyone was very suspicious of term limits, but now everyone loves term limits.
They do.
There's nothing people love more than term limits. Yeah. I couldn't be more in favor of term limits.
Yeah.
I'm 100% for them. In any case, Ben Carson's original claim that the 2016 elections weren't going to happen was going to be because if the GOP didn't win the Senate. I'm sort of curious now that they're probably going to win the Senate, why he's decided to stick with that dire prediction.
Well, right, because
the benefit then? What do we need freaking GOP in the Senate if they're not going to be able to prevent the dissolution of the government?
I know. Well, and the other thing that he said, even still on his current list, is that the U.S. Senate is refusing to consider legislation passed by the GOP-controlled House of Representatives, which is a talking point that, everybody is really loving right now because it's making it seem like the Democratic Senate is not doing anything, which is sort of like, well, they're not getting any legislation from the House that is not
ridiculous
or throwing out Obamacare or something like that, so of course they're not voting on that. Also, it wouldn't pass if they voted on it anyway, so if the Senate does go back into Republican hands, then that argument is out the window because then they will start getting things that they can vote on from the Republican House.
I'd like to see what they attempt to pass in that situation.
Right. And also, no one cares about the national debt. Sorry, Ben Carson.
No,
that's just not a thing.
It's over.
Right.
We're done with the national debt.
Right. And also, everybody, we may sort of be suspect of the war against ISIS sort of currently, but we ultimately get around to loving a good war. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, we didn't have anarchy over the Iraq war the first time around, and that was actually
that was a dumb
based on
mess.
Nonsense.
Yeah. No.
So this, his list is suspect.
His list is suspect. It's all things that have happened before and have never resulted in the dissolution of the electoral system. Like, right. That has never happened.
Right.
I'm not super worried.
I think anarchy is sort of, like, all the more reason to, like, go forth with an election, ultimately.
Yeah.
I mean, right?
Preventing anarchy. Yeah. If you have anarchy, it's a good time to hold an election.
Right.
To see if you can organize some shit.
Right.
Get some stuff squared away.
Well, he's not a genius.
He's not a genius.
He's a doctor, but he's...
He's a medical professional. He's not a political genius.
No.
That's what we know.
Yeah. And in
final news.
Which has nothing to do with politics.
Nothing so
or really
far has had anything to do with anything, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Isabella Tanakumi, an unknown author, whose real name is Amy Gonzalez, I think, or L. Amy Gonzalez, is suing Disney because she claims that Frozen stole elements from her 2010 autobiography, Living My Truth.
Yeah.
Here's what Frozen is about.
Mm-hmm.
It is about a princess.
Yes.
And her magical sister.
Right.
And their snowman who talks.
Right. And the sister can turn things into ice.
Right.
And makes herself a magical ice castle, and I mean, a lot of things happen in that movie.
A lot of things
I
happen,
saw
right?
Nothing.
A lot of singing happens.
Not a one thing that could happen in real life happens
no,
in that movie.
No, not at all.
No.
Here's what she's claiming: there's a list of 18 stolen elements that she claims.
I think one of them is that she has a sister.
Yes, it was a story about two sisters.
Yes.
A lot of those going around.
Yep.
There was a village.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my.
Betrayal.
Oh God.
Open doors / gates is one of them. Doors open in my book. Disney stole the idea of opening and walking through doors for me. And then...
And betrayal. No one's ever written about betrayal before.
Never.
No.
And then a, quote, moon setting.
Oh, my.
So does her real autobiography have scenes set on the moon?
I don't know.
Is that what's happening?
Don't know.
She also mentions another one of her books. Yearnings of the Heart.
These books sound awful.
They can't be good.
They sound like the worst.
They sound self-published is what they sound like.
Yeah.
So in any case, it's a $250 million lawsuit that includes cease and desist paperwork.
Yeah.
Meaning that, I mean, obviously she's not going to win, but if she won, they would have to stop selling all merchandise related to Frozen.
It would just like, Frozen would just go away
entirely.
Away. Like, that's not going to happen. Also, Frozen is based on... Anderson's fairy tale, The Snow Queen.
Like,
it is actually based on a thing that is
not
her book.
Could her life have also been based on that fairy tale?
Can Hans Christian Andersen's estate retroactively sue her for stealing...
Stealing his imaginary tale
the
of magic?
Snow Queen for her life? For her life story? Yeah, I mean, come on, lady. So ridiculous.
I love that she's trying.
Yeah.
She's Peruvian, I think, but she lives in New Jersey now. Oh. As you might imagine, a person in this circumstance would. And she's just, I guess, she's a registered nurse and physical therapist and artist. That was according to the biography
that's
on the back of Yearnings of the Heart, which I read online.
Oh, God.
So that's the news this week.
Yeah.
We will be back next week.
Yep.
And soon we're going to be back with a brand new computer.
Oh, that's right.
Our podcast may sound terrible.
I'm going to be back with a new phone, which doesn't have anything to do with the podcast.
Nothing to do with
anything.
But
I'm excited about it.
But Brent's super excited about it.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to be back with a new phone, because fuck the iPhone 6 and its giantness.
Yeah,
it's too big. I have little hands. I'm a little person. In any case, we will see you next week.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.